Hello there, listener, or should I say, hola, listener. This is the Dismantle Ideas podcast. This is, in fact, episode 5 of the Dismantle Ideas podcast with me, Matt Freemantle, a fellow inquisitive human. I am currently sunning myself in Barcelona. Not that the weather is much better here than it is in the UK right now. I've decided to escape very, very briefly to come and eat some tapas and drink some nice cold beer on the terraces of Barcelona for a little while, because I was going a little bit stir crazy after lockdown. So apologies if there's any difference in the sound quality. Hopefully you don't notice too much of it. This week's episode is all about love, flirting, dating, and, you know, generally speaking, love and relationships during the time of lockdown. Our guest, or my guest, is a psychosexual therapist called Kate McKenzie, who I've worked with a few times. In this week's episode, me and Kate had a long and ranging discussion about a lot of things to do with love and dating and flirting, how you can read the signs of people trying to flirt with you, how you can put that into practice yourself, how you can connect better with those that you might be in a relationship, whether that's a friendship or, you know, something more, a partnership or anything really. We spoke about the importance of honesty and a technique she calls bridging as well, which was all very, very interesting, and I feel like I learned a lot. We also spoke about turtles and octopuses. Now, that might sound a little random at this point, but it will all make sense very, very soon. Please don't forget to like our social media channels, Dismantle Ideas on most places, or just Dismantle on Instagram, with all the vowels removed, of course, so DSMNTL. And also head over to our YouTube channel and hit subscribe as well, because we've got lots of good stuff coming up there. And also, we've got some amazing webinars coming up as well, so head over to our website if you want to keep an eye on what's happening. Anyway, I will stop talking now. Welcome to episode 5 of the Dismantle Ideas podcast. This week, it is Dismantling Love in the Time of COVID with Kate McKenzie. I hope you enjoy it. Joining me on today's Dismantle Ideas podcast, I have the lovely, the fabulous Kate McKenzie. How are you doing, Kate?
Good. Thank you, Matt. Thank you for having me, and thanks for guiding me with all this technology. Yeah, really interesting. Thank you.
It's a learning curve for everyone, I think. Mm. It's something that I didn't know a lot about beforehand, and now all of a sudden I'm apparently someone who loosely knows what they're talking about.
Wow, well, you're doing very brilliantly. Thank you. Thanks, Matt.
So, Kate, thank you so much for joining me today. For those of you who don't know who Kate McKenzie is, in a nutshell, she is a psychosexual therapist. So I am not an expert in psychosexual therapy. So, Kate, do you just want to explain what that means?
Yes. So a psychosexual therapist is a therapist who individuals or couples or throuples, it could be any amount of people, could come to talk about their relationship issues or their sexual issues in order to build their confidence, to feel good about themselves, often to normalize what they're going through and to help them grow and deepen in their confidence. So that could be anything from not being able to orgasm, pain on penetration. It could be difficulties with erections. It could be that you're not communicating with your partner, or you are able to be sexual, but you're not able to connect emotionally. And so I'm also using emotionally focused couples therapy and a technique called bridging from Hedy Schleifer, which helps me to help people also to go deeper into their feelings and help them to be vulnerable and open to their needs and their wants so that they can open the relational field. So that may be that they open up sexuality and also intimacy, communication, so that they feel that they live in much more open and appreciative and positive realm with their partner or in their life with themselves.
Okay, fantastic. So you speak about bridging. What exactly is bridging?
So bridging
sounds really interesting.
Yeah, thank you so much. So bridging is a technique. It comes from Harville Hendrix's work, Imago work, which is the idea that we are drawn to people who mirror the best and the worst of our caregivers. We're literally magnetized to them. And so that relationships, including with ourselves, we can create anxiety and cycles for ourselves, but relationships with other people can feel like heaven and can feel like hell, because people can do the exact same thing our caregivers did, the best and the worst. And so he developed a lot of scripts and words that helped people start to listen to their partner more clearly so they could understand where they were coming from. And what Hedy Schleifer did, she added the idea of slowing down, breathing, connecting with your body, aligning and regulating yourself so that you open your prefrontal cortex so you're actually ready to listen to your partner. Because, of course, you can imagine your partner might talk about a difficulty or frustration, but if you're a bit tense, you could get quite triggered. And so the idea with bridging is that we teach people and guide them how to get into a really good space, how to get into a relaxed space so that they can really hear each other. And when people really hear each other and really understand, my partner's not attacking me, they are just really sensitive about that issue or that circumstance. And you can help partners get much more secure, much more steady. And so instead of having attack dances or attack withdrawal or who's the bad guy dance or the protest polka or flight and flee, where people run away or keep splitting up, you can begin to get really steady and hear each other. And this, of course, can really help the sexual realm as well, because no one wants to be demanded into sex. Or sometimes people have what we call disorganized attachment. So they might be saying, oh, they're up for sex, and then withdrawing when sex happens. And so to help them get more steady and much more conscious about how they're engaging in those kind of ways with their partner.
It sounds way more sort of complicated in depth than I expected it to be totally honest with you.
Yeah, well, it's quite simple. A bridging, for example, is a very, very, very simple technique of slowing people down and getting one person to listen to the other one and doing something called appreciative inquiry, where you're listening and asking them questions and they get to open up and open up and they get to know themselves in a much deeper way. And you can use a bridge to do amends, where you're saying sorry for something. You can use a bridge to express joy, express a frustration, express sometimes we call something the toughest neighborhood, where couples go round and around and around the same argument. They can't get out of it. So we'll do really deep bridges where we go into where did that come from? That argument, your side of the coin and the other person's side of the coin. Where did that really come from? Why it's so hot in this couple. So although on one level it's very, very, very simple, on another level it's got to be done really, really well. It's got to be held really, really well.
I mean, I'm a guy that's been single for quite some time, so I haven't had to do any of this kind of work for a while, just with myself, basically.
Yeah.
And I guess the people around me, perhaps, yeah. But not my relationships as such.
Sure. That can be more triggering, but you know, we can have our own dances, can't we? We can have our own cycles in ourselves where we get anxious or we worry about stuff or we get into sabotage, or, you know, we can have our own things that go on for us. So it can be very helpful just to slow ourselves down and listen to ourselves. Yeah. So I do teach bridging. I'm teaching a closed group in September, from the 21st of September, for 4 Mondays, which will include individuals and couples. And paired.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And the reason why is because if you come as an individual, you'll be matched up with someone else. So it's done in pairs. But I just think that it's such a useful technique for everyone to learn this method of slowing down and appreciating yourself and inquiring into what you really deeply feel about different things. What visions do you want? What blocks are in the way? How do you shift those blocks? And I mean, this is what people have done with meditation, isn't it? They've used meditation or running or swimming sometimes, you know, just to go in and hear themselves. And this is another method where you get someone else's kind presence, kind eyes to really help you go in and meet yourself. And so therefore what happens is in couples, eventually you and your partner can become the therapist to each other when you've developed enough safe space that you can really hear each other. And so it's really training you both to kind of really be able to hear each other. And initially, it can feel too much to hear your partner because people can think, oh, I'm going to get attacked, or I'm going to get put down, I'm going to get criticized. And so to help people create that space where it's not about that, it's about sharing what we call primary feelings. Primary feelings are the vulnerable feelings like sadness, joy, despair, happiness, anger. What happens often in couples or even in individuals is we're not used to slowing down enough to become conscious enough of what we're really feeling. And what we have is we get into secondary feelings, which is the reactivity, which is getting angry, getting sarcastic, getting passive aggressive, getting critical, blaming other people. This method slows us down enough so we can begin to go, what's going on underneath? Oh, yeah. I was a bit sad about something that happened. Something triggered me this morning, but it came out later. Does that make sense? It's helping people really, yeah, really absolutely. Get in touch with themselves. Yeah. And the other part of it is in this work, we often see that people can often be turtles or octopuses. What does that mean? And it's not binary. It's not black or white. People can be mixtures depending on your attachment style. But octopuses are the pursuers, the searchers, the reachers. In fact, apparently real octopuses have one main arm that reaches out and one main eye that reaches out. And so octopuses are often people, the pioneers in the world. They set things up. They get things going. And they're always on the go, always searching. They may have had to grow up a bit too quick when they were young, so they may not have got all the support they needed. And so they're kind of ahead of their game. And they'll be the ones that will leap in, even if they don't know what they're doing. Then you have turtles in the world. And, of course, in real life, turtles have to be very careful because if their shell gets cracked, I mean, that's it for turtles, you know. So they turtles, you know, don't want to come out unless they feel safe. So they feel they can get very, very nervous. They're often very bright, very intellectual, but can feel very shy. And the octopus relates to the anxiously attached, always seeking, always searching, and the turtle relates to the avoidantly attached, which is like, I'd like to be on my own. I need my alone time, which we all do. And I do yeah. I do feel that under every octopus is a turtle and under every turtle is an octopus. But in couples, you quite often get it can be a mix. You can get both doing both, but you quite often get one predominantly more octopus, one predominantly more turtle. And what happens is the octopus can be very critical and the turtle can be very snappy and defensive. And you can have this dance, which is hard for them to get out of. And so part of the journey is to make the space slow enough and equalized enough that you help the turtle to come forward and set boundaries and say, you know, I like it like this, not like that. And you help the octopus soften and trust that the turtle can be there for them. Because it's quite hard for the octopus to trust anyone that's going to be there for them. Because the octopus is often all about service. They give, 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 give. And so it's helping them to slow down, both parts to slow down, so that even when the turtle gives something, the octopus doesn't just jump on it and go, I've wanted that all my life and it's never happened. And so, but when you get the space to be much, much safer, the turtle might not need the same amount of space. They still need space, but they might be able to be around the octopus in a much safer way. They might not have to escape them all the time. Mm. They might not get the same dynamic, which feels toxic, it feels dangerous, it feels really, really hard. Now, of course, some relationships you shouldn't be in, they aren't right. But if the relationship feels unsafe because the dance is really terrible and that can be addressed, then it can really start to change that quality of that relationship. And the potential is something that felt unsafe can become safe.
Why are they both sea creatures?
Oh, yeah, very good. Well, very, very good. This again comes from Harville Hendrix. He named it as the turtle and the rainstorm, or the octopus being the rainstorm, being the loud one, yeah, and the turtle. And someone else named it as two sea creatures because it kind of made more sense. And if you think of the ocean mirroring emotions, you know, we use the idea of water to mirror emotions. So we're in the ocean of joy or the ocean of sadness. And so these are emotional. We're talking about emotions in relationships. We're talking about how do you feel? And so using sea creatures, often it's the turtle who flirts with the octopus. Often the turtle will come forward and think, oh, that's a lovely octopus. Oh, that's a lovely octopus. I'm going to go forward. And then the octopus goes, right, you're mine. And starts to get panicky and clingy. And then the turtle wants to get away. And they wonder, we were so good at the beginning. We were so relaxed. And it's to do with the panicky dance came in. It feels like life and death. Are you going to commit to me? Is this forever? And the turtle's like, I can't commit to anything. What are you on about? I can't commit. So it's just helping them to understand their different worlds, their different languages. And also if they have disorganized attachment, which might mean, I want you, no, I don't. I want you, no, I don't. I do, I don't, I don't, I do. Helping them to manage that better because that will create chaos for them and for the other and for all kinds of relationships.
Do you tend to see that more at the start of relationships or can it come at any point?
Which bit?
The sort of dance between the two. Is it more prevalent at the when a relationship's just starting? Because you mentioned, you know, one side kind of being interested in and intrigued at the beginning and then the other side getting a little bit grabby and a little bit kind of insecure. Is that something that happens at the beginning, you know, when you're sort of doing that dating and the sort of first bit of courtship, if you like?
So in the beginning, often, not always, depends on the coupling, often people are more relaxed. So in that space, the turtle's feeling themselves. If it's a turtle, it could be mixed attachment. But the turtle's feeling relaxed. They're flirting with the octopus. The octopus might be quite relaxed. Maybe they've had a bit of fun. So often when people are early dating, it might be quite fun. Might be quite fun for one day or a year or 6 months. You know, actually might be quite fun. There might be hints that the octopus might be a bit hysterical sometimes, but it still might be okay. You might both be relaxed about it. It's often when people make more of a commitment that they move in together, they have kids, or it could be sooner than that. Depends. If you make more of a commitment, the patterns may arise. The anxiety patterns may arise. Yeah. And so where it may have felt really good, it starts to feel like this is dreadful and we don't know where to go with this.
Do you think COVID has changed the way that we date? Talking about dating specifically and, you know, people going on their first dates and meeting people for the first time, how has that changed the game? How has that, do the normal rules still apply or is it slightly different now?
I think it is slightly different. I think one, people are doing Zoom speed dating and which I've been told is actually more intimate than and more accessible because people can go on their computer and you're suddenly in a little room with someone, which feels less, I've been told, less intimidating than walking to a room by yourself. Or people said they'd be happy to go on a Zoom computer speed dating, whereas in real life they'd want to go with a friend to a speed dating event. So that something's changed there. The other thing is that it seems like people are then doing their video calls and then meeting right now anyway in the climate we're in this moment sooner, whereas in the past maybe on apps and things people might have had a lot of messages, it might have gone on for a long time, maybe people would have tolerated a long time. A lot of people want to find out, it seems to me they want to find out sooner, what's happening, are we going to meet? It might not mean that a relationship's going to happen, but they want to get things going. People I work with, the sense I get is that some people this has really worked for, actually, you know, they've got going, they've done Zoom dating, and now they're meeting people and they're going on dates. And some people, it's worked a bit and not so much. Some people are going on meetups. But there's a sense, because people were stopped, absolutely stopped for quite some time, there's a sense that people really want a partner and that that's what matters.
Yeah.
And that somehow, with all the distractions taken away, it's like brought it into sharp highlight. Does that make any sense? So people are like, now what do you do with that? Well, you have to kind of go and do the numbers game of meeting people or going on apps or whatever. But yeah, I do think it's changed things. Yeah, I do.
Do you think people are sort of just generally seeking connection a lot more now?
Definitely.
Because as soon as that's taken away from you, I think you kind of take it for granted, don't
Definitely.
You?
Definitely. It's made it sharply focused now. The walls are down. Yeah. I'm not going to, like, you know.
Why waste time?
That's what I want. I'm going to do it. I want to go for it. I don't know what's going to happen, but yeah, it's interesting. I suppose because we've been in a strange 1984 movie, haven't we? Or Day of the Triffids,
yes.
Haven't we? And, you know, there's a sense that time has collapsed on one level and that everything has changed on one level. And these interesting and strange rules keep happening. And then the end of the day, what have we got? We got our hearts.
Mm.
Yeah. And what matters? And I think that's my experience of people is they're saying what matters. And so for some relationships in lockdown, that has meant that some people have got closer. And for some relationships, they've got violent and they've got difficult. And there's been a lot of court cases in lockdown and a lot of people leaving, splitting up with people. So I think, yeah, it's exaggerated situations. So for the single, in my experience, it's exaggerated, they want a partner. And for couples, it's exaggerated, we got to sort this out, or why are we together? And or some people are splitting up. So it's put things in a pressure box, perhaps.
Do you think that's a good thing ultimately?
Well, it's very
well, not on one side of it, obviously.
Not the violent side.
Yeah.
Obviously, but on another level, it's really powerful to see people really strongly say, no, I really want a partner. You know, I've put so much effort into work or money or earning a living, you know, and actually what I really want is my special person. And it is really beautiful to hear someone really admit that. It's not that it wasn't there, but to really dare say that. It takes a lot of courage, doesn't it? Because once you've said it, what do you do? So it takes a lot of courage to dare to admit these primary feelings. Or even in a partnership, if one partner feels like they need more space, it takes a lot of courage to say that to your partner. Because people can be scared they're going to upset their partner. But it's when we can be that honest that we create a new sort of relationship. We may the boat may get a bit rocky at first, but then something better can happen as it deepens. All of this, I think we all have the potential to change in this time, don't we? And think, what do we want? I've heard a lot of people are moving out of London, which makes sense to me. You know that.
Yeah.
I've heard somebody close by here has moved out of London. But, you know, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it makes total sense. And you're right. What do you think psychologically the benefits have been for people in this period? You know, whether they're, you know, let's say people are realizing they need that connection. Do you think that gives them a psychological boost, or is it making people almost kind of more desperate in a way?
I mean, you know, someone said this to me, which I think was really true, is that this lockdown's had seasons. And I don't want to claim any absolutes for anyone, because I think it's been different experiences for different people. But, you know, there was when it first came in, there was a huge amount of work that just went. And I'm a workshop leader and I work with people. Some people didn't want to work online. All my workshops got cancelled in a day, you know, that were spread into the future. So I had a day of like cancelled, you know, and I was like, oh, that's quite scary. And
I can imagine.
And I went the night before lockdown, I went to see a comedian who's, you know, well-known, established comedian. And he said, all my work's cancelled for the next 5 months. And I thought, oh, this is such, this is so odd. This is just so odd because it's so surreal. And so for me, I had a bit of fear. Oh, what am I going to, how am I going to manage this work changing? And then I got used to a little bit of downtime, because it was quite nice. And then suddenly I got loads more work in a different way. I worked, it was all the festivals I was working for, all the things I was working for went online. And then people got used to the fact it was all online and they were happy to work online. And then suddenly I was working online, but other people haven't had work. Some people have been overworking. So but even so, it's felt, I don't know if you felt this, it's felt like there's different seasons. And when I've been working with people, for example, who wanted partners, there was an incredible focus because they couldn't meet anyone at one point. So the people who maybe had been more shy were coming forward, and I was so excited.
Oh, wow.
They were coming really forward, and it was almost like all the distractions went away and they got their focus about meeting someone, which is great. And then working with couples, they were suddenly more together. So by doing couple counselling, they were engaging and being more of a team. Do you see what I mean? So lockdown kind of helped because normally they would have had many distractions, and lockdown was helping them be together. But again, lockdown's carrying on, isn't it, for a long time. And so I think that has an impact. I don't know how you feel, but I think everything being on Zoom has its limits.
Absolutely. I think people are missing physical connection.
They are.
Really, right? I mean,
they are.
God, it was so long before I could even, you know, hug anyone, and I still haven't really done it yet. You know, it's
exactly.
I think that's such an important part of human nature to have that
exactly.
Just, you know, lifted from under your feet.
Exactly.
I think that's been really tough for some people. Really, really tough.
It's too much. It's too much, and that's the one of the weirdest sides of this time is. That there's been a lot of suicide. There's been a lot of suicide and a lot of violence, because actually we can't live without contact. We can't live without community. We really, really need it. And little children, we all need it. Every single age group needs it. There's been amazing things, isn't there? So many creative things, so many, the art classes and you name it. And I think our human contact, maybe this is what we're coming towards, maybe this is our gift, is we're shifting into heart consciousness. I think that is what's potentially happening, that we realize what really matters is our connections to others. Maybe it depends on our caregivers, but often people have been so busy or rushing around, or that wasn't seen as important. Maybe service was important or actions were important, or
it slipped down the list of it, yeah, of important things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we even had the language to name what we need. But I think we do now. My goodness gracious, don't we? Like you said, we need hugs. We need people. We need that regulation. I mean, it's very serious, people not having enough community. Very serious.
Do you think it's going to be tough for people to go back to what was normal before in terms of their relationships? Do you think, I mean, not in every case, I guess, but do you think people have changed or have been changed that much by this lockdown period that actually they might be different people going back into the same relationships, and it might present some interesting issues, you know, or not issues necessarily, or just certain difficulties or certain changes that make things different from where they were before?
Well, I think that's a really good way of putting it, because you didn't have to see anyone. So in some ways it set boundaries. It's like being a kid, isn't it? You have to go home now. You're allowed one walk a day.
I bet some people loved it, actually, to be fair.
Yeah, it's kind of kept things simple, didn't it? And although people might have missed their more complex lives, you know, it was like for a while, it's like being a little kid, you know, only do this, only do that, this way and that way. So in some ways people didn't have, you know, if somebody had a problem with someone, they didn't have to see them. They had all the excuses in the world to not see anyone if they didn't want to. And if you've got a problem with setting boundaries, potentially you could start to practice setting boundaries. Or if you needed to practice asking for more friendship, for more connection, then maybe there's a part of you that needed to stretch to say, oh, look, would you meet for a socially distanced walk, or would you meet, or finding ways. You know, I know someone who goes to Hampstead Heath for, it's like a meetup where they do a bit of ritual and a bit of meditation regularly. And she's found it so nourishing in this time, outdoors and like a little workshop regularly. I don't think we will go completely back. I think we may carry on going, finding new ways.
Do you think in some ways it's also been a bit of an introvert's dream? So people who perhaps, you know, don't particularly like going out and seeing people and don't, that's a sweeping statement, but, you know, people that are perhaps a little bit more comfortable in their own company, do you think even those people now are like, oh God, maybe I'm not as introverted as I first thought I was?
Both and, yes. Yeah. I mean, all that pressure to be sociable went off, didn't it? It was amazing. That's why it's so weird. It's like seasons, because in a way there was such a gift, wasn't there? Oh, you don't have to go anywhere, you don't have to do anything. You know, in terms of like, it's almost ticking a box. You should be whatever, socializing, doing whatever in certain ways. No, gone. So for some people, they wouldn't have liked that, of course. But yeah, you said, some people that would have been a dream. Oh my God, all that. No more guilt. No, I just can't. And
your only social obligation now is to sit on a Zoom call with someone once a week.
Lovely. But even then, after a while, like you were saying, I think that need for human, actual, real life contact starts to come into play. And so, like I said, everyone's going to be different. Maybe you might say different things. I might say different things. But I think there has been, I agree with you, you know, that amazing sort of like, oh, that don't have to be responsible to so many people, gone. And yet the need to have human contact. The way society perhaps was, it seemed like they were, you should be like this, you should hang out like this, you should have friends like this, or you should this and that. And I'm wondering where the part of the gift is. How do you want it to be? Who do you want to hang out? How do you want your picture of life to be? But equally, I'm not in a city, and I think I have to say I do, and I'm not working for the NHS, I think certain aspects of this are really, really, really tough. And I think, I think it's been incredibly tough on some people, too tough maybe. If you were trapped in a small flat with no outside space in this heat and having to put masks on, and I think there's some things that have been a bit too tough, yeah.
I think lockdown's had enough airtime now. Let's move on to some positive in-person type relationship chat.
Yes.
I'm going to keep this really simple. Is there a guidebook to flirting? Are there a few never-fail moves? Moves? Is that the right word?
Yeah, lovely. So back to the turtles and octopuses. In some ways, when it goes well with the turtles and octopuses, they engage in being more of a dolphin. They engage in play, in fun, in expression, in sweetness, in heart-centered connection, in expressing feelings. If you think about dolphins, our image of dolphins anyway, of, you know, making quite sweet sounds and connecting in a sweet, fun way, and just playfulness. So the key with flirting, there are three parts to flirting. One is service, as in spreading light around the world, being friendly to everyone. That's the little baby, that's the older guy, that's everyone just sharing smiles. It brightens up the world. Two is warmth. Can I help you? Just connecting generally. That helps all of us and regulates all of us. And three is, if you like someone, how do you build that kind of flirting, and how do you let someone know? And that's staying a little longer, looking a little longer, just allowing that space, to connect. Do you see what I mean? And the reason why I'm saying that is many people friend zone people. So they, what they don't realize is they are either doing the service one and they're just keeping it really light and friendly, or they're doing stage two, which is, again, you know, friendly to everyone. They're not allowing it to go to stage three. I really like specifically you, and I'd like to get to know you more. So how do you do that? How do you it's getting to know your own flirting skills, and it's getting to know what is it you want and how do you work with your own energy so that you communicate the right signals. So one is, how much fun are you having? That's very, very important. You need to look in your diary and see if there is any fun. And if there's enough fun, put some fun in, because how we treat ourselves, how we love ourselves is what we'll give off. Two, have a look at your own, if you sabotage things. So what does that mean? Is sometimes people tell me when they find someone attractive, they walk out of the room, down the stairs and into another room.
Or wow, really?
They get dry mouthed or they get very nervous. And so what we would say with flirting is that you learn how to, one, stay in the room and breathe and take it stage by stage, where you might then move slightly nearer that person and breathe and relax. And the more fun you're having, it'll help you. And then you get to know your own energy. So you might, for example, rub your belly and move your body, get to know your own sensual sexual energy, be playful with yourself so that you can start to be playful with other people. Because Kansas University discovered that most people cannot read flirting signals.
I definitely don't think I can.
Yeah, most people can't. Most people can't. So you can't. You don't.
No, I don't think so.
Most people can't. Most people, there is a psychological reason. Apparently it's from the poison berry. When we lived in villages, if one person found a poison berry, they went around telling everyone there's a poison berry to make sure the whole village didn't die. So people are looking out for something to go wrong. They're not looking out for something to go right. So often, you know, I've worked with people, and let's say there's women and men come out, let's say women who like men, cisgendered women, heterosexual women who like men, and men have come over to them and teased them. They have thought that they're not being very nice to them. And I've had to explain to them that they are flirting with them.
Yeah.
That teasing is...
That's a classic, isn't it? That's an absolute playground classic.
A playground classic, but in certain types of female worlds, teasing is being cruel. So in certain types of heteronormative, maybe heterosexual male world, I've noticed that men will go, "Ooh, big belly. Ooh, what's going on with your hair?" And it's normal, as far as I can understand, it's normal to tease each other that way. In certain female worlds, if you went, "Ooh, big belly. Ooh, what's going on with your hair?" That would be the end of the world. That would be a disaster. That would be rude. So you have to start to help people understand that everyone communicates in these different ways. You have to become, this is where slowing down helps. If someone's paying you extra attention, if they've got nice flushed cheeks, they keep looking at you, they're smiling, something's happening. Now, if it happens more than once, something's happening. Obviously, you've got to see and find out, take your time. But again, if you slow down and see how you notice, see how you feel, relax, enjoy it. So people start to get more attuned to noticing flirting signals from other people. Yeah. So it does.
So you've got to really work on it then. You've got to, you know, it's not some, if it's something that doesn't come naturally to you, it's something you've really got to try and actively work on, right?
It doesn't come naturally. If you look at little puppies or little children who are happy, because sometimes children and puppies, they could have been mistreated or they might be depressed. But generally, if they're happy, little children, little puppies, have a look at how they are. They are, hello, they're flirting naturally. They expect you to flirt back and you to like them. And so what happens is adults, understandably, have had knockbacks, difficult experiences, disappointments, things that have happened in their lives. and we get out of the habit. And we get out of the habit of setting that kind of space, which is this open warmth, high, not looking, not goal orientated, just kind of real friendly,
natural.
Exactly, natural.
Yeah.
But we get out of it and it takes a bit of practice, fun, connecting with your body, any kind of dancing or moving or swimming, anything gets you back in your body, because that will, if you look at polyvagal theory, if your belly's relaxed and you're breathing through your belly, your nervous system's relaxed. And then there's a relationship with your facial tone. They call it vagal tone, your vagus nerve, which runs through your body. People who've got, they never smile or their faces are quite flat, may have trauma they're not aware of that hasn't opened up. And all of us have had different things that have happened, different knocks and traumas in our lives. And so as adults who may have had all kinds of things going on, it takes practice to kind of get into that. Hey, and especially if you've got a partner, you want to be flirting with them. Flirting being hi, affectionate, how are you? How was your day? Rather than, have you sorted that out? Why is the washing up not done? What's going on? Which doesn't create such a lovely atmosphere. Do you see what I mean? Or avoiding your partner.
Absolutely.
But if we're busy doing jobs, doing this, doing that, how do you get yourself into that lovely space where you go, hi, how are you? Now, the other thing I was going to say is culturally, there are different ways to flirt as well. And it's always helpful to ask a question for directions or information, or notice something about the person, what they're wearing, what they're doing, and relate to that rather than go head on into sexual flirting, unless you're cruising. Because if you're gay in certain cultures, like gay culture, there is a thing about cruising. So some people, you have to check in who you're flirting with and how, to make them feel comfortable. So often if you just build with affection, then you build with sensuality, connecting and being more sensual, and then you build towards sexuality. So you stages without goal setting, relaxed, warm, exactly what you said, natural. But it can take a bit to get natural. And that's the thing. That's the thing, is basically the key is becoming magnetic. When you're magnetic, so you've relaxed enough, swum in the sea enough, things that help you feel good, you naturally glow, you're naturally vibrant, and you naturally attract. And so even if one person, the partner, starts to have more fun, she or he or they can bring that fun back to the partnership.
So actually, you know, the core of it all then really is just being happy within yourself, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. This will help a lot, everything a lot. But of course, some people, that's hard. If they're a really tight octopus, they're all about service. So they're going to focus on the other, they're going to focus on helping everyone else, if you see what I mean, before themselves. So yeah, it is about that. And then also for some people, it can be helpful if they learn, you know, that is the key. If you can forgive yourself, release your shame, heal your wounded inner child, which we've all got, and that's the part of us that comes out and wants to be sarcastic or grumpy or sabotage because we didn't. It's not fair. Really give to that part, which is a lot more play. We all need a lot more play. And I think that's what couple work's about. You've got two adults and two little wounded children. And both of them feel it's not fair. And it's...
You need to get the wounded child needs to sort of stand up and be noticed a little bit more and...
More attention. There's a lot more play.
Yeah.
A lot more play and to be heard. And I think when we say to our partner, we bring that warmth, how are you? How was your day? Even if you're in the same house and the same environment, both hanging out together... Bringing that warmth and appreciation, gratitude, the great attitude, when you give that warmth, it creates support, it creates love, it creates warmth and openness, and we all feel different. And when we knock ourselves or others down, everything feels knocked down. So I suppose like the Native American story, which wolf do you want to feed? You know, the wolf of fear, the wolf of love. And I suppose what I'm saying is love takes a lot of practice. We don't always wake up feeling bajing, but we can get into things that help us feel that way. And that creates magnetism, and that creates worlds within worlds of creativity and opportunity, especially with yourself, especially with relationships. So, yeah, when you're having fun, you stop looking for the one. But looking for the one is great, but as a light-hearted thing.
Yeah.
So, and it's the same in a couple. When you're having more fun, you stop looking at your partner to fulfill all your needs. And then they may do. They may come on board, but they know you're not putting it all onto them.
You don't want to have to rely on them for that purpose.
Yeah, right? Well, if you do, that's when often it goes downhill, because no one likes to be pushed. They know. Their little inner child's going, that's not fair. So we all know what's fair. And we deeply feel that's not fair when it's out of balance. Yeah.
Are some people's petulant child more difficult to control sometimes? And is that why perhaps people aren't very good at settling in relationships sometimes?
Definitely. The inner wounded little child, plus shame, guilt, any stuff we're carrying about not feeling good enough, not loving ourselves enough. Yeah, all of that. You know, because who wants to let anyone in if you don't feel good enough? Wants to, because they might clock you and go, yeah, you're not. Or, yeah, your little inner child might go, they're not getting it right. They're not doing it right. Or I'm going to fix them. I'm going to make them be right so I get them to be right. And so, yeah, these little, and that's where play comes in. More and more and more play, because your little inner child wants often friendship, swimming, play dates, you know, going to bed on time, nice food, you know, being safe. And you can start to do that. You can start to give to your little inner child, and this will help a lot. And then if it's a couple that comes together, two people take responsibility for their needs, their inner child, then they can have fun. They can have fun together. It's more of a possibility. And that's part of bridging work, is you see and hear your partner's inner child. And then that gives you the empathy. Oh, wow. You know, when they were pushing me and crowding me, doing all this stuff to me and ordering me around, it's because, like, they didn't have enough parenting going on. And they were like the little mini adult, and now they're doing that to me. And oh, and when they get panicked about me spending too much money, I can see, because one of their parents overspent on money, and so they were panicked as a child. And so suddenly you've got empathy that your partner's not just a Nazi. They had these wounded parts, and it melts people and it changes people. And they, I studied something called forum theatre from Augusta Boal, and we can't kick someone when we know their name and we've heard their pain. They become real. They become a whole being to us. And that's what happens in couple work often, or in bridging, like I said, I'm such a fan, is you start to hear how it is for that person. It may take longer for some couples because of the stuff that's gone on, or the what we call the toxicity, the stuff that's built up in a couple. But yeah, absolutely right, Matt. When we can take care of ourselves, we're much better set up for being with someone else. Because the truth is, being in a partnership, a conscious partnership, is going to trigger all the buttons you've got.
Right. Always.
Yes. It's the deep... You know, your meditation guru ain't going to push you so hard. Your therapist is not going to get you because you can escape them. Your partner, they see you. They clock you. They are going to get you, and they're going to notice you, and they're going to push you. So if people are up for partnership, it's a great thing to do, and it's a big thing to do, you know. It's a big thing to do. And also, you never know if they're going to last or not. We don't know. And people die. You know, it's a hell of a risk, isn't it, to open your heart. So, but it's one of life's great gifts. I mean, for some people, their mental health is in such a way that it wouldn't be right for them to be in a partnership, which is fair enough. So everyone's different, different needs and wants. But I think being given support to navigate the world of relationships is very, very helpful. I find it really helpful. I'm obviously a fan because I'm doing this work, and I wouldn't do this work if I didn't need to learn. I absolutely, some people, I think maybe they're naturally securely attached. Maybe they had like two parents who were there and they're just securely attached. They met their partner young and they're together with them, and it's all certain level quite smooth. I think some people do have that, and they know how to relate. They know how to relationships. And for those that it's more tricky, I think marvelous to offer out different ways to say there are ways to create the space to connect better. And that's with your children, your parents, your partners, your friends. Yeah.
You spent some time as a dating coach on the Undateable as well. I mean, which must have been really, really fulfilling. But was that a very different job, or is it a similar job, just that you had to deliver it in a slightly different way?
You know what's funny? And you never think this, do you, when you watch television? They actually researched a dating coach who'd work specifically in the area of disability. Can you believe that? And I'd worked for 18 years teaching dance and drama, mainly with disabled people. And I was a dating coach and a love coach. And honestly, maybe there are other people. There probably are other people like me. I have found a woman who's an expert in helping couples with autism, Asperger's and ADHD recently. So that was interesting. So there are people who specialize in the relationship field with different needs. I was amazed. They literally researched, and then they came to a talk. They filmed my talk, and it had to go.
Oh, yeah, wow.
It had to go to the commissioner at Channel 4. They had to check me out. Then they had to check me out again. I thought, wow, this is absolutely amazing. It was such a process. And they said that The Undateables was like a flagship show for Channel 4. And so it had to go through a lot of hoops to be okayed. And that was really interesting. And then I had an afternoon with Richard to help him move to being able to have a second date, because he always had a first date, but he would get very nervous and he couldn't get a second date. And so I had a whole afternoon with him, and we did a lot of different things, including role play, affirmations, confidence building skills. And he went to a second date, which was marvelous. So it was a good experience. Yeah.
Amazing. So do you keep in contact?
He did a little bit, but also I leave that up to him if he wants to, or I was thinking, if he wants to, he's very welcome to. But when you've worked with someone, you kind of leave that space up to them, if that makes sense to you, so that's up to them. But I did think it would have been nice for them to give him some more, because it worked really well for him, and it would have been nice to do more. But I suppose they have their storylines and different things they're doing, so it works in different ways. But no, it was interesting. It was interesting to do that. And we all need to be helped to feel like we can take that next step. And it can be very helpful to have someone help you there, because what this beautiful woman called Mary Fenwick, she's a columnist in the Psychologies magazine, she said, if you've practiced saying things once with a safe person, you can do it again somewhere else more safely. And what Richard was doing was, every time he went on a date, on a first date, he would say the wrong things. He'd be with a Russian woman and talk about Chernobyl, and then she would ask him to stop and he would carry on out of nerves. He went on another woman another day and he ate the chips off her plate, and she found that rude. But it was probably nerves. You know, he was acting out, probably out of nerves. And so they would never go to a second date, because he'd do something that would annoy them, but somehow...
The sabotage thing.
Sabotaging, exactly. Inner child thing, exactly. So his inner child was probably freaking out. This is too scary. This is Oh my goodness, first date. And so what he did with me is we got him to practice, we got him to role play, he role played with two other women as well, and then being guided from the women and from me what would be best. So then when he did a first date and a second date with someone, he'd practiced enough. So he was a bit, he'd gone to Ireland and found the rose rather than he didn't know where he was, and then you're left to your stuff. So I do think that if there's one message I could say to people is up your fun and get some safe compatriots you can practice stuff with. Because what happens is people leave flirting and dating and all. And that's why practice with anyone you can around you. Practice in the shop, just being warm and friendly. Because if you can practice there, it's much easier when it matters. But if you've not practiced at all, then when it matters, it gets like, oh, I don't know how to do it. Yeah.
Role play. Okay. Well, that's
helpful to practice. I think that's helpful to practice. Yeah. We practice everything else.
That's true.
And somehow we think we should just know how to date, know how to flirt. Yeah. And it's one of the hardest things to do.
Because it's you kind of laying everything bare, right?
Heart on the line. Oh, my God. It's like, will they like me? Am I nice enough? Am I pretty enough? Am I this enough? Clever enough? That enough? It's like a job interview of the whole of you, except ideally it's not. Ideally it's a numbers game of just meeting people, but it can bring up all that unworthiness if anyone's ever felt that, you know. It can bring all that, or it can bring up, you know, people can judge the other person or think, oh, they wouldn't like me or I wouldn't like them, or it just brings up all the stuff. And so we need to do a lot of relaxing and a lot of practicing to just go, it's just a person, and I'm going to try this out. Doesn't have to go anywhere. Try out. What's it like to say hello? Hi, how are you? Oh, I like those vegetables. What would they do? You know, or, you know, is there anyone who'd mind flirting with you today? Can I take that chance? Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. I think that's a really nice place to leave it. Yeah. Kate, it's been really interesting to talk to you. I feel like I'm learning a lot personally as well. Obviously, you know, I'm in Spain at the moment. My Spanish isn't fantastic. So maybe I should go out and practice some flirting.
Yes, that'd be so good. Tell me what happened.
Yeah. I will do. There's plenty of nice little tapas restaurants here. So, and lots of little tabernas. So, you know, that seems like a good setting,
perfect.
Right?
Perfect. Hola.
Hola. Kate, thank you so much.
Bless your heart.
It's been great to talk to you.
You never know what might happen right now. I hope you tell me.
I will keep you fully informed. Yes, you'll get an invite to the wedding, I'm sure.
Perfect. Honestly, I did a comedy with one woman. They're called The Bitch Diaries. It's on YouTube. And we did three. She hadn't had a partner for 12 years. And we did three little comedies. Like, they're like 2 to 5 minutes of me coaching her into a relationship. And by the fourth one, she had a partner. So she put him in the fourth one. She's still with him years later. And it all worked out. So that was comedy. That was just doing comedy. But something changed in her psyche, I think. Something kind of opened up. So you never know. This is an interview. You might go out there now and go meet the lady of your dreams. Who knows? All meant to be today for some reason. You never know.
Wow.
You never know.
Thank you very much, Kate. It's been great to see you and great to speak to you. See you again soon. And there we have it. I mean, who knew that sea creatures had such an important role to play as part of our love lives and relationship lives? Who knew? Are you a turtle or an octopus? I'm not 100% sure what I am. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Had a lot of fun chatting with Kate. Thank you very much to Kate McKenzie. What an interesting episode, and very different to some of the topics we've covered recently. So thank you very much for tuning in. Guys, in the next few weeks, we've got an episode coming up on psychedelics. We've got an episode coming up on time travel and cults. And not to mention all these wonderful webinars we're going to be launching over on the Dismantle website. So that's www.dsmntl.co.uk if you want to keep an eye on what we're up to. head over to our YouTube channel, hit subscribe. We've got lots of video versions, unedited, of these interviews going up on there, as well as some webinars and some clips of other bits and bobs we've been up to. So please do come and check it out, and like us on all social media channels if you've got 5 minutes. Dismantle Ideas everywhere apart from on Instagram, where we're just Dismantle. Thank you so much for joining us this week, and we hope to see you again very, very soon.